Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't
gamble.
I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by FanDuel. NFL Week 12, Monday Night Football Edition, with the Eagles and Seahawks set theoretically to close things out, although we may have a little wrinkle in store with Tuesday Night Football between the Baltimore Ravens and the Pittsburgh Steelers. I'm your host, Todd Furman, joined as always by my esteemed colleague and co-host, the one, the only Payne Insider. And Payne, hopefully your Thanksgiving hangover has officially worn off as we get into the following week.
6 days off has left me in a little bit of a fragile mindset right now, that's for sure.
Is this what happens is this what happens when you get out of game conditioning mode as soon as you waver for 48 to 72 hours? All hell completely breaks loose?
That's certainly what it feels like, yeah. The six-day break has turned things sideways, without question. Did have a couple drinks. Everyone was a bad influence on social media. They said, get out there, have a couple Tito's. I did. I obliged. I had three or four on Thanksgiving, and that was about it. Nothing too crazy.
I wasn't sure how many Tito's you had regarding yesterday's best bet, but we'll get to that particular rant in a few moments.
No rant.
Oh, no, there's got to be something. I mean, we have two head coaches that we can absolutely eviscerate on this podcast, and if you're not going to take the bait, I may have to do so. But before we get into the nuts and bolts of this week's show, we do have a couple of winners to crown in our Bet the Board free roll contest.
Yeah, we did our Thanksgiving giveaway to all the loyal listeners that went to Apple Podcasts and gave a five-star review. We threw those names in a randomizer. We're going to give $100 cash to three winners. Those winners, Jay Hove, 410, PGA underscore Patrick, and Alliterbee. Those are the three winners. So use the contact form on our website, bettheboardpodcast.com. Send us a note, and we'll get you taken care of. $100 cash to each of those three folks who left five-star reviews on Apple Podcasts.
Belated
Thanksgiving.
Yep, and just because that contest is over, all of you loyal listeners out there, we always encourage you to go to iTunes, five-star reviews. Help us out. Show us the love one way or another, and we can make some things happen. But all right, Payne, it is Monday, so we kick things off with the good, the bad, and the ugly. And rather than going glass half empty, I want to start with the positive this morning. So do we give accolades and praise to the Tennessee Titans for going out there with a good offensive game plan, attacking in space, hanging 35 points on the Colts in the first half after you told us last week that the key for Tennessee to be successful was to break tendency? They did that and then some to get themselves a huge win in the division.
There was a really strong trend involving quick turnaround division games that span within a two-week period, and that that trend continued. And if you look at the Titans, they came out, as you mentioned there, and just smacked the Colts right out of the gate, 35 points in the first half. And you look at some of those underlying metrics, 8.7 yards per play, a 73% success rate in the first half, 10 explosive plays in the first half. And you're right to a certain extent. You saw Tannehill hit that pass to A.J. Brown, broke tendency. I believe it was first and 15 for that 69-yard touchdown. But if you look in the first half, Arthur Smith was 68% run on first down in the first half again. Didn't change who he was, actually ran more. Now, I will say this, it became significantly easier to do that Friday when we find out DeForest Buckner test positive, Danico Autry's out, Bobby Okereke's out. So you have three key cogs of the Colts front seven that were all out. And we know how important DeForest Buckner is to the Colts defense, right? That was the three technique defensive linemen that Chris Ballard was like, we are in desperate need of this position this offseason. And basically, this is how Matt Eberflus's defense runs with this three-tech interior lineman. He just wasn't there. And if you look at some of the splits when Buckner's off the field versus on, there's a glaring difference. And I wouldn't take anything away from the Titans, obviously they smacked Indy, took control of the division. But you're looking at back-to-back weeks now. We've kind of called the Colts defense a little overrated. We said, hey, this isn't the fourth most efficient defense in the NFL. They haven't really faced anybody. They faced back-to-back good offenses, and this doesn't look anything like a top-five defense.
No, that is definitely the case, and we'll see if Indianapolis can get themselves back on the winning track. A difficult game, at least on the surface, within the division this coming week, a total that we've already seen take money against the Houston Texans. In terms of other good that you took away from yesterday and or, of course, Thursday's games, what did you see that really stood out to you in the positive variety?
I think you have to give San Francisco some credit there. They're just battling, man. You know, through all the injuries and now, you know, a little bit of the bullshit, they're being, you know, displaced down the stretch during what is now a little bit of a playoff run, right? You can't practice in your own building, can't play in your own building. So you look at Kyle Shanahan and the 49ers, the back's been against the wall pretty much all season, and now they're about a game out. And if you look at yesterday against the Rams, San Francisco controlled the things that mattered most. They get off to the quick start, then you have the momentum play out of the half, and then you finish the game with the two long drives down the stretch. And I'll be honest, Todd, that was a game that we were not on, debated all week, missed the good side of the key number there, and then didn't address it again. And so all of a sudden, the Rams, who didn't play well, but they're up 20-17 with 14 minutes to go and have all the momentum, and you're thinking like, oh, okay, maybe we evaded one here. It looks like the 49ers go from winning the game outright to not covering at all. But all of a sudden, Kyle Shanahan just zaps the game back. They have those two long momentum drives. You take the, you know, 10-play drive that goes almost 6 minutes to tie the game, and then you have the 11-play march. And it wasn't pretty, but, you know, you get the game-winning field goal there on the 11-play drive, and it's a huge division win. It puts them back in the mix, and I think you have to praise the 49ers for that. They have just been battling all season. Injuries, doesn't matter. And then the current situation, it'll be interesting to see where they are relocated for practice in some of these games. What's the initial thought process? Potentially Arizona is what they're saying,
Yeah, one of the reports, I believe it was Jay Glazer yesterday, saying that the 49ers had explored being down in Arizona as their new temporary base of operations. This is kind of an hour-by-hour type thing. And it'll be interesting to ultimately see where they relocate for not just the next couple of weeks in terms of a home game next Monday night against Buffalo and the following week, but maybe where they need the temporary facility to carry them through the end of the regular season. And it'd be one thing if you were just playing out the string, but you alluded to it. The fact that the bottom line is the entire NFC West is still very much in the discussion to make the playoffs. And with the big win over the Rams and Arizona losing on the road to the New England Patriots, suddenly the 49ers more or less control their own destiny, knowing that they have a couple of division games down the final five games of the stretch.
Yep, exactly. And it'll be interesting to see where they end up relocating. Just a really tough situation for San Francisco. I mean, I love Kyle Shanahan, and I like a lot of those guys over there, so I think this is a tough one. Hopefully, you get some good news. I know Trent Williams came back about a game quicker than they had thought. He had the COVID situation, and it was a little more difficult for him having battled cancer previously, so good seeing him get back out there. It looks like you got your running backs healthy now. And Ayuk seems to be the only guy that's still with, you know, a possibility to return next week. I don't know the situation with Kittle. Tough guy. I think if they are in the mix a couple more weeks down the line, he has the potential to return. But it's still a beaten up team. But they're just tough, man. They're gritty. I love Kyle Shanahan. So tough to see them get misplaced here a little bit, displaced down the stretch, but good team overall.
I'll tell you, one guy that doesn't love seeing Kyle Shanahan is Sean McVay. Shanahan has more or less had the Rams' number when we talk about matchups and head coaches doing things like that, and the 49ers continue to beat them outright as an underdog. Payne, I was a little bit disappointed in your man crush. He put together one of the most historic first quarter slash first halves with about 300 yards against Tampa, and then he looked human in the second half, allowing the Bucs in the back door as 3.5-point underdogs. But Tyreek Hill, absolutely sensational. 13 catches, 269 yards, and 3 touchdowns, eating Carlton Davis's lunch in that first quarter.
So the Chiefs have another gear that nobody else has in the league, and we've mentioned that a couple times, and we saw that in the first half here. And you mentioned Mahomes, pretty electric. You know, him and Tyreek were in perfect unison in the first half, 359 yards passing for Mahomes. Five explosives, 10.1 yards per pass attempt. And then there was some down-to-down efficiency as well, 57% passing success rate. But I also think you have to give Spags some credit as well. And I think we mentioned that in the breakdown, that he might come out with a decent little game plan here. It was something that he took pride in with the Giants during that first Super Bowl, which gave Tom Brady some trouble. And sure enough, he had a solid game plan here as well. Aside from the back-to-back explosive plays for Tampa's offense there before the break, you had the long one to Gronk and then the one to Ronald Jones down the sideline. If you look at the first half, they set the tone. And I know Brady ultimately adjusted there, but if you exclude the kneel down in the first half and you talk about the five real drives that Tampa had, Tampa's first four drives sold 14 plays for 39 yards. So, sure, it was Mahomes and Tyreek looking electric offensively early, but Spags was getting those guys off the field pretty quickly. And, you know, obviously you mentioned the second half. There was a little bit of a letdown there. If you took Tampa Bay plus 3.5, which was, you know, kind of the contrarian, sharper side there, saw a couple guys value bet the 3.5. You obviously cashed, but that game wasn't remotely close compared to the final score.
No, it's the second. You know, honestly, Payne, it's the second straight game the Bucs have played with the exact same final score, where they've lost to the Rams 27-24. You lose to the Chiefs 27-24. And I don't think either of them, they were competitive in those games.
It didn't look that way. It didn't feel like they were in the game at any point, honestly, even though the final score indicates they were. And you mentioned Mahomes is virtually perfect on the day. But if you look at his completion percentage, it was fantastic. He's right now the leader in the clubhouse this week, 12% above expectation. But at 27-10 late in the third quarter, Mahomes makes his first really erratic throw, which could have ended it. It would have been 34-10. Mecole Hardman is literally streaking up the left seam. Mahomes just throws it behind him. Mecole is still running as we record if that is caught and placed in the right area of the field. And that game's at 34-10. It's over. Good night. See ya. But that was his first, you know, really, really off pass. I thought the offense didn't look terrible in the second half. They got a little reluctant, and they made the big drive late there that didn't give the ball back to Brady and Tampa when they truly needed it. It just felt like they were kind of going through the motions a little bit there. It's really wild to watch. They need to play a complete game. We're seeing these like ups and downs from them. We know the gear they have. It feels like they're going a little bit through the motions. And I don't think they need home field advantage, especially in a year like this where not going to be a ton of fans at these games anyways. And that just seems how they're going about things. They're testing some things out, right? Some games are like, hey, just going to see if the short pass game works here. Other games are like, hey, let's just air this thing out. It's really interesting to watch. They've been a tough team to gauge a little bit this season for me.
Well, let's be honest. They didn't play a complete game last year, and they still were Super Bowl champions when it came to the postseason. So Kansas City, 2.5 quarters at their absolute best, appears to be enough to beat most of the NFL who wants to try and play a full four. And it's just awfully scary to think about, knowing that they should theoretically have an outstanding chance to repeat as Super Bowl champions. I wanted to go kind of transition to the bad, but I think this is a double-edged sword here, because on Thursday, you saw the Washington football team come out and assert their dominance, employing a physical brand of football with Antonio Gibson for the second time this year against the Dallas Cowboys. But I think it had to be as disappointing and disheartening for Cowboys fans as well, when you consider that they averaged just 4.3 yards per play. They weren't able to get things going on the ground whatsoever, and the defense that had shown a lot of intensity in slowing down Minnesota in the previous Sunday really lacked that energy and excitement from start to finish on Thanksgiving.
Yeah. Now, there was some real sharp money on Washington. That thing closed below the key number of 3, but I think Washington was clearly the better team. They had the better defense. The offense did enough to move it. It wasn't overly impressive, 5.1 yards per play. There wasn't a ton of explosiveness out of the pass game and Alex Smith, but it's more of a controlled pass game. They were successful in 53% of their plays overall, 57% of pass plays. So it's this methodical pass game. You did get the ground game going a little bit, 182 yards on the ground, 5.1 a carry, had 5 explosives there. Antonio Gibson is starting to really emerge, and all the things that we had heard was this was Scott Turner's handpicked guy, wanted him. He was going to be involved early and often. The one kind of knock on him to this point is he's this converted receiver and he doesn't have the best vision. Well, now all of a sudden it looks like he's getting comfortable. Some of these holes that he was hitting against Dallas seem to be the right ones. Now it's Dallas's defense. They've had some issues stopping the ground game this season, but a huge division win on the road, short week. Tip your cap. This is a team that at least has some direction in my mind. You know, they're pretty well coached. They're trying to build the culture up. Those guys have bought in a little bit to this point in time. The defense is well above average. So there's some good things about this team. It's going to be really interesting to see what they do with the quarterback position moving forward. That's the only, I think, big question mark about this organization. But it feels like they have the right leadership at this point.
Yeah, you have to believe that Ron Rivera can be a strong stabilizing force. And maybe the decision to go to Alex Smith has paid dividends when you have a veteran leader in the huddle for an offense that otherwise lacks a lot of continuity. There's no doubt that there are a number of boxes that they have to check, especially on the offensive side, figuring out who their quarterback of the future is going to be. But you have to be slightly more optimistic in the nation's capital now than where we were at the beginning of the season when Dwayne Haskins just didn't appear to be that guy.
Oh, without question. And it was more so certainly the on-field performance left some things to be desired from the coaching staff. Wasn't overly accurate, wasn't quick thinking, wasn't getting the ball to where it needed to be. Then there were some off-field things. So they made the transition to a guy who was accurate, knew how to run an offense, and was a consummate professional. In terms of Dallas, though, wildly disappointing effort, I think. And as you start to move forward a little bit, they had made some tiny little switches offensively, moving Zach Martin, their best offensive lineman to this point in the season, highest paid guy. They kicked him out to right tackle. They did that in the Minnesota game. Worked very well, got better protection. He goes down. Cam Irving also goes down. So you're now again without two starting offensive linemen for the Dallas Cowboys. That could hurt things moving forward.
Yeah, talk about a team that really has to be balanced. Andy Dalton at this point in his career isn't going to beat you throwing for 400 yards unless they have a complementary ground game, and we'll see exactly what we get from the Cowboys. The next time we see them on the football field, we're not quite sure when that will ultimately be. When I look at the debacle, or we can call it what we will, between New Orleans and Denver, Payne, I believe James Palmer was the one that shared this nugget. The Broncos and Saints combined for just 91 gross passing yards, the fewest in a game since Week 14, 1982, between the Dolphins and Patriots, where those two teams combined for 89. A hat tip to Kendall Hinton taking over in adverse circumstances to run the Broncos offense. But are the Saints ultimately going to open the playbook a little bit and we're going to see Taysom Hill try and throw the ball downfield? Or are we talking about New Orleans as purely a power ground game with him, Latavius Murray, and Alvin Kamara until Drew Brees returns?
I think this is interesting, right? Because if you just look at some of the metrics, right? They're going to tell you everything that was expected. I mean, I'm not saying that this was a great performance by New Orleans, even though they got the cover. And honestly, some funny things there is very sharp money on New Orleans on game day laying the 15. It's why it went to 17. And right, you always hear this old thing here. You can't lay double digits with the total that low. Well,
you can when the other team ain't going to score. Here.
Yes. So listen, just looking at some of the passing metrics, Denver, 1.2 yards per pass attempt, a 10% passing success rate, zero explosives. New Orleans, not much better, 3.3 yards per pass attempt, 26% passing success rate, just two explosive passes. To me, is Taysom Hill the guy? Probably not. It wasn't anyone that we thought was going to be this elite level quarterback. We probably think Jameis Winston's a little bit better. But in a game like this, where Hinton is the quarterback, someone who's a converted wide receiver, you're coming into the game with a low variance plan to begin with. And so I think once you kind of saw what Hinton was, you're like, hey, let's just hand the ball off here, rely on the offensive line, and get the hell out of Dodge. We don't need this high variance aerial attack to beat these guys. And so I think that played into things a little bit as well. But no doubt, moving forward, as long as Drew Brees is out, you're going to face tougher competition on the road here at Atlanta, division game, in a quick turnaround revenge spot, you're probably going to need Taysom Hill to throw the ball a little bit more in a game like this.
Well, especially knowing that Atlanta faced Taysom Hill a few weeks ago, and it was a contest where they trailed 10-9 at the half before it ultimately got away from them in the second stanza. But that may be a game that cracks Thursday's podcast, still yet to figure out that particular menu. Do you want to lay into Matt Patricia and Anthony Lynn now? I don't want you dancing on anybody's grave as they're on the unemployment line trying to find a new head coaching job and another coach who probably will only have his job until Black Monday at the end of the season. I mean, the floor is yours. If you want to take shots, should you choose to take the high road, I think our listeners would be disappointed, Payne, but they'd completely understand.
So let's do this. I just pulled up your notes here now. Let's touch on the other game that you want to touch on first, and then we can start dancing on graves if you would like. Let's go with Arizona, New England. You want to talk about that one first, and then we'll end with a hoorah.
I just want to try and figure out, and full disclosure here, I didn't watch the games in their entirety yesterday as I was on the road coming back, so could only dig into this box score, listen to a lot of it on radio, but couldn't quite figure out what was going on in this particular football game. I mean, Arizona holds New England to 179 yards of offense, yards per play 4.3 to 3.5. Zane Gonzalez misses a important field goal late in the game again. I know Cliff Kingsbury came out and defended him in the post-game press conference, but you have to be wondering, given his inability to make timely field goals in crunch time. Cam Newton, 9 carries, 46 yards, but just 84 yards passing. This is a game, if you are the Arizona Cardinals, you have to win. And I love their aggressiveness at the end of the first half. I know they ultimately came up short, but that felt single-handedly like that was the entire game. When they didn't poke in for 7 at the end of the first half, it was all she wrote, and it was New England from start to finish throughout the second half.
Certainly changed momentum, without question. But the one thing you have to give Bill Belichick credit for is he at least devised a game plan to limit Kyler's legs. And they also did a pretty good job limiting the explosive pass. And if you look, Kyler averaged 3.9 completed air yards yesterday. And you go back to the Thursday night game against Seattle where Kyler dinged up his shoulder and you constantly see him, camera panning to him, kind of like working out the shoulder that Thursday night game. And then he randomly pops up on the injury report Thursday and Friday with a shoulder. So something that we'll have to monitor a little bit. Hopkins also banged up a touch. For New England, though, it's what we've seen all season. Cam is just inconsistent. It's been an absolute roller coaster with him. He was the least accurate quarterback yesterday, 13% below expectation, 3.3 yards an attempt, not a single explosive pass. There wasn't down to down efficiency either, 38% passing success rate. So Vance Joseph, who's got some familiarity with the Patriots and Belichick a little bit, thought the Cardinals did a pretty good job there, obviously keeping New England's offense in check. You mentioned it, I think, at the top, 179 total yards there in the day. Somehow the Patriots pull off the win. That's a game, if you're Arizona, that you gotta have. That's a must-have game. But I have to tell you, because, you know, there's this perception out there, right, that just pros win every game they bet. And we have tried to pound the table and say, like, hey, you know, goal is like 55% here.
Wait, you actually lose bets?
That total.
I haven't lost a bet all football season, so speak for yourself.
that total was hammered over by some of the sharpest guys at 49. Didn't have a prayer. Did not have a prayer in that game. So that's something that we'll have to monitor a little bit there with Kyler's shoulder, Hopkins dealing with a little bit of an ankle. It certainly, knowing those two things, does not shock me that first thing Monday morning we're seeing some support here for the Rams going from -1 out to -3.
You know, one last thing too on that particular game, you mentioned Kyler's shoulder, and I think that was a storyline that wasn't really explored going on, but there were some questions asked. You know, did Arizona want to limit his ability to run outside the pocket? Were they going to do things differently to try and protect him? And there's no doubt about it. They lack that big play potential. Kyler, a more pedestrian rushing day. But, hey, this is a league where everybody adjusts, and you've seen it now for the last couple of weeks. Seattle used more or less a mush rush on Thursday night to try and keep Kyler in the pocket, and New England mirrored that game plan going, hey, look, this is an offense that doesn't scare me with Kenyon Drake and Chase Edmonds. If you can at least limit the effectiveness of Kyler's legs outside the pocket, we'll see how the Rams are able to learn from that, knowing that Aaron Donald becomes the ultimate disruptor this Sunday. Ugly-wise, the Raiders, Payne, this is low-hanging fruit. They did allow 43 points, just gave up 304 total yards, so clearly some noise there in some of the metrics. They finished the game minus four in turnovers, and yes, fumble luck ultimately regresses, but I see fumbles oftentimes as a lack of focus more so than anything else, and the Raiders appeared to be disinterested from the start of that football game. Took 11 penalties, 141 yards, net penalty yardage differential of minus 92. They averaged just 4.2 yards per play. The crazy part about it was their defense wasn't their undoing, and then in the wake of that, watched some of the comments from Derek Carr last night, said flat out, we didn't have the week of practice we've normally grown accustomed to. But somewhere along the way, if you want to be considered a contender and you're fighting for a wild card spot, losing a game is one thing. Going out there and embarrassing yourself for the second time in 2 years, where they did this last year, I believe it was against the Jets, that can't happen, and that's a direct reflection of the coaching, whether John Gruden bears the brunt of it or Derek Carr. I'm not sure who needs to own that particular performance we saw yesterday against Atlanta.
You're right. They did have that no-show. I believe it was in the same week 12. Week 12 at the Jets last year, there was like 34-3. They just absolutely no-showed on the road. This game ticked me off a little bit because we were looking at Atlanta all week plus three, and then Julio Jones got announced out and we didn't take 3.5, and just another game that we should have been on that we weren't. But you're right. Offensively, it was ugly, obviously. And this falls on Gruden's shoulder. He's the head coach. You got to get your guys up for games like this. You had the tough loss on the last drive of the game last week against a division rival in Kansas City, and it looked like that loss had a lingering effect when they went out and traveled to the East Coast for a non-division opponent. So, not sure what to make of it. This is a team that's kind of lived and died on its offense, although the defense has quietly started to trend just a little bit better as they've gotten healthier in the secondary. But 29% success rate overall for John Gruden's offense, 4.2 yards per play. That's just not going to get it done. Derek Carr, 4.6 yards per pass, one explosive pass all day. So that's just not going to get it done for a team like this. The offensive line that had been really overachieving all season, when you look at some of the injuries along the offensive line, finally came back to life, and they had a poor performance. Atlanta was all over Derek Carr yesterday, pressured him right and left, sacked him, turned him over. The pressure was really what got to Carr yesterday.
Yeah, we'll see if the Raiders can bounce back. Second straight game on the East Coast, this time taking on the New York Jets in a potential revenge spot for the aforementioned embarrassment that they suffered last season. All right, Payne, head coaches. Matt Patricia, of course, loses his job along with general manager Bob Quinn. Quinn probably falls on the sword because he was the one that fired Jim Caldwell in the wake of a 9-7 season. The Matt Patricia experiment, an unmitigated disaster for the Lions, who at least were competitive with a different head coach. And then Anthony Lynn, we know he's been given a stay of execution, but I'm not quite sure what that offensive game plan was from the Chargers yesterday. When Buffalo plays 17 men in the box, you insist on trying to run the football just because you get your shiny new toy back in Austin Eckler.
So, you know, let's start with Detroit's situation, and you kind of hit this perfectly. The GM is gone because he fired Jim Caldwell, who went 36-28, made the playoffs two of his four seasons in Detroit, and wasn't good enough. And I think Detroit had a little bit of a false sense about who they were as an organization. I know the GM ownership saw regression, I think, from Jim Caldwell's defense, didn't like it, and now we're hearing whispers, right, that the first guy that's on their list, and you told me about that this morning, is a defensive coach, which just, you know, shoot yourself in the face.
Staggering.
But if you look...
Staggering that they would go in that direction. Now, I know there's another storyline to it, you know, to give a little bit of context. They talked about his ethnicity being a tie to a strong Lebanese community within Detroit, and hey, if that helps you sell tickets, I'm not going to stand in the way of a business trying to operate, but our feelings are well documented in the National Football League and college these days. If you're hiring a head coach, you make it an offensive guy, and you just hire the best damn DC you can find.
Yeah, and I mean, your team right now is Matthew Stafford and hopefully, knock on wood, Kenny Golladay, who is a free agent. We'll see if he decides to leave. But, you know, if you go back and you look at the first season under Caldwell, the Lions were actually number one in defensive efficiency, but by year three, they were 31st. Final season, the defense surged back to above average in efficiency on defense, but it wasn't good enough. But Jim Caldwell's an offensive guy. And so, I don't know. I don't get it. I just, when I look at Detroit and I see 36 and 28, two playoff appearances in four seasons, I think that's really good for who they are at this point. But you look and the organization says, we're going to go bring in Matt Patricia, this defensive-minded guy is from the Belichick tree. In two seasons, the Lions haven't sniffed the playoffs, 13 and 29 before getting fired. And if you look at those right now, if you look kind of towards the back half of his time in Detroit, 5 and 19 the final 24 games. Four of the five wins were by a combined 12 points. The lone exception, the blowout this season, Todd, it's against this powerhouse down in Florida called the Jacksonville Jaguars. They won by 18 in that game. And, you know, we talk about this all the time. Your team should, at least to some point, reflect the personality of the head coach. And Patricia was brought in for defense. The Lions finished 21st and 23rd in defensive efficiency. This season, they're currently in the bottom seven of that category again. So the defense only got consistently worse under Matt Patricia. So he's gone. Good move. Let's see if they at least make a smart decision in bringing an offensive-minded guy to at least give Stafford some semblance of hope.
My God, it's a little bit scary. It's one of those things when you look at some of the quarterbacks around the league and skill position talents, you wonder what Matthew Stafford's career could have been if he was in a good organization, the same way we feel about Barry Sanders and Calvin Johnson that came before him. And to a lesser extent, you begin to wonder how dynamic Allen Robinson could be as a wide receiver if he hadn't come up through the Jaguars organization and been stuck dealing with the Bears debacle over the last couple of years and what lies ahead for him if he ultimately finds a new landing spot. But speaking of receivers, quarterbacks, and all that good stuff, can you explain to me what the hell the Chargers were doing yesterday?
Going to stay calm. I will say this. Anthony Lynn, one of the nicer guys in the league, but unfortunately, he's just a really, really bad coach. Anthony Lynn might be the worst coach in the NFL. And it's actually difficult to watch this guy fumble around and not know when to use timeouts and doesn't know when to kick field goals or go for it. Everything that he does, it feels like he's doing it on the fly. Like there's zero organization or plan or this like thinking of things out before they happen. Like the idea of visualizing all the potential possibilities on a drive before they actually happen, like don't register in his mind. You can tell, like the cameras pan to him and they're just waiting. Like it's appointment television watching the cameras pan to him and to see Anthony Lynn try to make a decision on the sideline. His wheels are just like spinning. It looks like a high school kid that knows he's about to bomb a test, right? That's what it looks like to me. It's like I was kind of one of those guys who could just like roll into class and like I could get C's and B's without even studying. But all of a sudden, like you get that one test in front of you, you're like, oh my God, this one's going to be bad. Like you just bomb it. You look uncomfortable. Like I know the vibe. That's what he looks like. And then you see the press conference yesterday after the game, and he doubles down. A reporter asked him, like, hey, has clock management been an issue this season? His response is, I wouldn't say that. I would sit down and talk you through every one of our decisions. I'm not saying it's been perfect, but what happened today at the end of the game, it was miscommunication. And I think if you're a Chargers fan, that's all you've heard come out of Anthony Lynn's mouth for multiple seasons now. It's miscommunication. It's communication was the problem. It's Lynn's excuse for virtually like everything. And you look past that, right? He's not a very good coach situationally either. Doesn't know what to do in critical spots. Shane Steichen has been terrible. They talk all the time about trying to establish the ground game, and they haven't figured out that their best attribute is throwing the football. And so, you know, if you look at some of the game situations here yesterday, it's 24-14 in the third quarter, and the Chargers have the ball third and one and fourth and one. They run it up the middle on back-to-back plays, fizzle out at the Bills 25. The very next drive, they're right back down the field. They have a first and five from the Buffalo 11. Somehow the Chargers have a third and inches from the seven. Shane Steichen calls a pitch play to the power back on the outside. It's literally a pitch 9 yards behind the line of scrimmage when you need an inch. And if you look the final 19 minutes, the Chargers ended up with a grand total of 3 points on trips to the Buffalo 25, the Buffalo 7, and the Buffalo 1. That doesn't even include a trip where the Chargers started at midfield and got 0 points. Think about that. To the Bills 25, the Bills 7, and the Bills 1. Grand total of 3 points because of Anthony Lynn and Shane Steichen. They had no idea. I mean, you have to feel for some of these players because the Chargers have some talent. The fortunate part is if you're like a Bolts fan right now, you have your franchise quarterback, you have a brand new stadium, this should not be a tough sell to land in an elite offensive mind. The other thing here that's just so bizarre
Give Lincoln Riley a blank check. Like, go into Norman, drive a Brinks truck if you're the Spanos family, and ask him how much money it's going to take him to be your head coach, knowing he's got a transcendent talent at the quarterback position in Justin Herbert.
That's the biggest thing. So if you're looking at this as a Chargers fan and you're like wildly disappointed, be happy, right? Anthony Lynn's going to be gone here pretty soon. You got the shiny new house and you have a franchise quarterback. You're out west, good weather. This shouldn't be a tough sell at this point. It was a tough sell before, right? You didn't have a stadium. You had a, 40-year-old quarterback. You had an inept coach. You've got the new stadium. You've got your franchise quarterback. This should be much easier. The other thing that's a little difficult to process here is that we kind of knew through the grapevine that Eckler would be back this week. That was part of this. But he was going to be in a limited fashion. It's going to be in a limited role. It's going to be limited, Todd. Only so many touches Austin Eckler was going to get. And I'm sure all the Anthony Lynn apologists would be like, well, he just wasn't divulging what was really going on. Sure. He led the team in targets. I think he had 24 of the 32 carries. He was the entire offense. Like, this guy literally has been out for months. So it's just like, it's just mind-boggling what goes on there. You feel bad for some of these players. And then even on the Buffalo side. I mean, we're not crying over spilt milk here. We lost the bet. But final 19 minutes for the Bills, they drive to the Chargers 12 and the 22. That resulted in three total points. If you watch the all-22 on the Josh Allen fumbled snap, the cornerback who was replacing Casey Hayward, who was out, got injured. So we're now on the third string DB, who is matched up against Diggs out wide on the play where the fumbled snap happens. You get like safety help that way. The middle of the field is wide open. It's a walk-in touchdown for, I believe, Isaiah McKenzie. And Josh Allen just fumbles the snap. Wild game there. Wild game. Let's just put it that way.
Hey, sometimes the best laid plans don't come to fruition. Those of us that have been in this business for a long time and those of our listeners that are new to the trade, you do need a little bit of lady luck on your side even when you put together a good game plan and think you've put yourself in a position to win football games. You can follow Payne on...
Unfortunate break for us as well.
Oh, there's...
I believe a couple minutes before kickoff, must have had some bad mashed potatoes there because Brian Bulaga threw up all over himself and then somehow did not partake in the game as he was sick game day.
Probably
morning.
Took your advice and went to the Anchor Bar, but Brian Bulaga eating spicy hot wings before a football game, not the best recipe for staying out there for four full quarters. You can follow Payne on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You, of course, can follow me there as well. Encourage you to follow the podcast more than either of us at Bet the Board Pod. Paying a quick look at some of adjusted numbers. Of course, these prices all courtesy of FanDuel Sportsbook. When we look at the Indianapolis Colts, this number look-ahead wise was a -3. You're now seeing the Colts at a soft 3, probably amid all of the concerns that you mentioned at the top, not knowing who may or may not be back in the fold for Indianapolis when they go on the road to Houston. And this number now actually down to 2.5.
It is down to 2.5. The look-ahead was 3.5. So you have that full point move through the most important key number in football. Houston looks really good. Standalone spot on Thanksgiving, so you have the extra time here to prepare as well for a familiar opponent. And it's basically what we've talked about for the Colts. You have a turf toe injury for Phillip Rivers. You're unsure of Jonathan Taylor's status. Kelly, your starting center, missed as well against the Titans. Defensively on the other side of the ball, we've talked about what Buckner means to that defense. He appears that he's going to be out again. You'll have to monitor the Okereke status. We'll have to monitor the Danico Autry status. But right now, the Colts are a little bit banged up, and Houston is in a little bit better of a situational spot here. So that's why this line's come down. We'll see what type of information we gather from this point moving forward. But certainly at this point, the line would indicate that Houston has a real chance here. And if you look at some of the trending metrics, the offense has been very good for the Houston Texans. And we have kind of talked about the Colts defense regressing a little bit. So we'll see what comes of this.
So what happens when you get Duke Johnson involved in your offensive game plan? Good things tend to happen instead of continuing to feed David Johnson, who is on the wrong side at this point of his NFL career. We've seen some money come in this morning on a side as well. The Tennessee Titans and Cleveland Browns. Tennessee was a 3-point favorite on a look-ahead number. That number has ballooned out to 5.5 this AM at FanDuel.
Yes. I think what we are seeing here, obviously Tennessee has the big win. Cleveland does not exceed expectations in a spot where you would think they would look a little bit better. Certainly there was a roughing the passer penalty on Daddy Longneck there, and it allows Jacksonville to get within the number. But I thought we would see a little bit more from Cleveland's offense. I believe they only punted one time yesterday, but it just didn't feel like this complete performance. We also have to monitor the status of some of the defensive things going on for the Browns. It's not a very good defense. I would assume Garrett is upgraded here, but Denzel Ward, we'll see what comes of him. This would certainly be a huge loss if Denzel Ward is not able to go. I'm not sure what the Cleveland Browns defense is. I think they're probably trending towards one of the worst units in the league. So Tennessee should have some success here moving the ball offensively. We've seen the Tennessee Titans defense struggle a little bit with stopping the ground game, but also with play action. Faced a very similar style offense in Minnesota earlier in the season where Stefanski has basically come from. They run the same principles. And so that gave the Titans some real trouble defending play action and things of that nature. So we'll see what comes of this game. But we have a Cleveland Browns future, Todd, to make the playoffs at a nice plus money shot. But this is quite possibly the most overrated 8-3 football team I've ever seen.
They can be overrated as long as they're an overrated 10-6. And, yes, they make the postseason. That is more than okay in terms of how we view things. A franchise that, quite frankly, hasn't experienced a whole lot of prosperity. And you look up and down the standings in the National Football League, I believe they're tied for the 4th best record in the league. Pretty staggering, given some of the concerns that you just outlined there. So we'll see ultimately where this number settles and when Browns money begins to enter the market. One other modest move, although it hasn't budged at FanDuel, they're still holding strong with the Buffalo Bills, -3. For what's expected to be a road game against the San Francisco 49ers. We'll see ultimately where that game gets played, but the market more or less a consensus 2.5. And ultimately, if that game does move out of Santa Clara like we anticipate it will, curious to see where this price does settle.
Yeah, so right now, not much movement on this game. You would think San Francisco and Kyle Shanahan will have an ability here now that they're a little healthier along the offensive line and with the running backs, that they could have some success moving the ball against Buffalo's defense on the ground. You're going to need more from Nick Mullins, though. 3 completed area. His average last week was 3 air yards per completion. So that's not going to get it done. I don't think you're going to need more from the pass game here. Hopefully Ayuk is back up. We saw Debo return this past week. So interesting game here. I'm a little surprised that it came off the 3 so quickly, but we'll have to see where this game ends up getting played. Even without fans in the stands, you're still giving about a point for home field advantage here, which would ultimately be lost.
Should be an interesting game a week from today to see those two teams. As we talked about at the top of the show, the 49ers fighting to stay very much relevant in the playoffs, and Buffalo, even with the win against the Chargers over the weekend, does have the Miami Dolphins breathing down their neck within the AFC East. We do have a game, of course, tonight, though, Payne, that could potentially close out Week 12. The Steelers and Ravens remain very much in a holding pattern with some news coming out this morning. But Philadelphia and Seattle, regularly scheduled programming, and Seattle is a 6.5-point favorite on the road at Lincoln Financial Field. Total on this game, 48.5 at FanDuel. Long rest, of course, for the Seahawks, who played last Thursday before traveling east. Meanwhile, you look at Philadelphia, they continue to underachieve and things won't get easier without the services of Lane Johnson along their offensive line. Playoff revenge surely on the mind for Philadelphia as well, as the game they lost 17-9 where Carson Wentz was unable to finish. But when you look at Philadelphia, not exactly great in terms of making you money if you bet them in their own building, compiling a 7-13 against the spread record their last 20 games at home. And Payne, more so than maybe diving into the Seahawks offense against the Eagles defense or vice versa like we normally do, are there certain matchups that you're watching in this game that you ultimately think are going to determine not only who wins the contest, but more importantly, who covers and what may ultimately happen with the total?
So this traditionally is a spot where Philadelphia shows up when you least expect it. And if you're just looking at the number itself, it is a touch inflated. This is your pros versus Joes type game in a standalone situation. So it's always scary to get out there and lay it with Seattle. That said, I did see a little sharp money at 4.5 on Seattle. I am intrigued to see what happens if this does get to 7, though. What I can tell you is Doug Peterson rode the F out of Carson Wentz this week at practice without Press Taylor around. And I was told that this was the hardest Doug Peterson has been on Carson at any point in their relationship. And now we have some reports that have come out that Jalen Hurts is going to see more time tonight, not just as this gadget guy, but with Carson off the field as well. Let's see what comes to fruition there. Your guess is as good as mine as to how many snaps, what the distribution looks like. But whoever's a quarterback, Philly's pass game is going to have to wake up tonight because they're probably not going to be able to just run the ball down Seattle's throat. That's the one area where Seattle's defense has been very good. 8th in defensive efficiency. That's against an elite schedule of run offenses. 4th toughest, actually. Of schedule of run offenses the Seahawks defense has faced. And now your all-world right tackle, Lane Johnson's out. And you never want that kind of guy to be out of the lineup, but we joked about this off-air, Todd, is maybe this is what forces the Eagles to pass the ball a little bit quicker. Go to what we have been pounding and banging the table for weeks. 1-3-step drops, push it in that 5-9-yard range. The one area that I did at least dig into a little bit is avoid the throws at or behind the line of scrimmage. Seattle's done a really good job rallying to the ball with their linebackers, and now Jamal Adams there playing in the box a lot. Seattle's a top five defense on short throws at or behind the line of scrimmage. Eagles, second worst EPA on those passes at or behind the line of scrimmage. The other thing that you should probably focus on if you're Philly is those short to intermediate throws that have been basically a staple for Doug Peterson and the Eagles offense. Tonight specifically, the curl routes, the out routes, that's where Seattle's defense struggles defending. Maybe you take a shot or two down the left side of the field. The Seahawks have been vulnerable there, but Shaq Griffin does return tonight, so that's a big get back for Seattle defensively. Where the Seahawks have been really good this year is against tight ends. Lowest receptions allowed in the league, 31. So maybe Goddard struggles a little bit tonight. I'm not quite sure. But Seattle has given up the 5th most receptions to running backs. So get Miles Sanders going out of the backfield. But again, not at or behind the line of scrimmage. Push him down the field a little bit. Get him into the pass game. Get him on a linebacker. Get him on a safety. Maybe Jamal Adams. And I think you might have some success there. But this is going to come down to the quarterbacks and making throws through the air, because I don't see the ground game being overly efficient. The other side of the ball is pretty simple. The Eagles are going to have to dominate along the line. That's it. The Eagles have to get pressure. The Eagles have to stop the run. And that's really the only chance they have. They have to disrupt Russell Wilson. Because I think what you're looking at here is Russell Wilson probably having a good day. Now, there is some rain in the forecast, it looks like. Supposed to rain all day at 8 o'clock specifically, about a 33% chance of rain. You know, 10-mile-per-hour winds. Russ hasn't been the best throwing with a wet ball. So we'll see what goes on here. But it comes down to Philadelphia. They have to be able to stop the run. They have to be able to pressure Russell Wilson all night long. When you look at some of the rush metrics, I know, Todd, we've talked a little bit about this off air. The Philadelphia defense has been wildly disappointing this season. I'm not a big Jim Schwartz guy. That's clear. The defense has continued to regress under him. Certainly the best area of the defense has been banged up a little bit. It's starting to age. They've struggled defending mobile quarterbacks this season. If you do remove the quarterback runs, though, the defense has been better stopping the run. And if you look, 11th in defensive rushing efficiency, 6th in run stop win rate. So it's not been the worst run game. And we're mentioning it because Chris Carson returns tonight. But if you're not going to get pressure on Russell, if you're not going to stop the run, then it's going to be game on. Seattle's going to be able to do what they want because Philadelphia's not good right now. Even bringing in Darius Slay, 20th in defensive pass efficiency. That's with a couple weather games in the mix too. And the Eagles have played a really light schedule of offenses, fifth easiest schedule of offenses played. Now you get an elite Seattle offense. So this is your classic pros versus Joes game. It'll be interesting to see. I'm hoping this thing doesn't get to 7, Todd.
We've lived through this before, though. You hope the same thing ultimately wouldn't unfold with the Jets against the Patriots. They covered. We rooted for the same thing with the Giants against the Bucks. They covered. Our listeners out there might be going, man.
Monday night has been really good if you just bet the games that I'm not hoping happen. And Seattle, we're hoping Seattle didn't get the -2.5 last week. Soft 3 was the best we had, and they went in a runaway against Arizona. So, yeah. Yeah, hoping it doesn't get the 7. I'll be candid. I don't usually do this, but, you know, we made this game 4.8. I don't know. We've burnt so much money on Philadelphia this season, including last week where, you know, you take 3.5, you watch the game close to. The Browns have 3 offensive points, you know, late into the third quarter, and you still can't cover that game. So, I don't know. They have just found ways to beat us all season, and it's just said one of those spots where, like, we can't do it. But this is probably the time they show up, right? This is when their backs are truly against the wall. The Eagles tend to show up. We'll see. And you mentioned the playoff revenge. That was not a game that Philadelphia took lightly. They were pissed all offseason about this cheap shot that Jadeveon Clowney threw on Carson Wentz. We'll see if that is potentially the rallying cry here.
Want to make ask you a bigger question in terms of Seattle's defense and perception versus reality and what they've been able to do. They've compiled 16 sacks over their last 4 games. They had 9 in the first 6 games of the season. Adding Carlos Dunlap has clearly given them a little bit more up front. But have you seen enough out of Seattle's defense trending in terms of going in the right direction that leads you to believe ultimately when this team gets healthy on the offensive and defensive side, because they will have their starting center back today, that they're a truly viable contender within the NFC and the defense won't be the unit that holds them back from getting down to Tampa with a potential shot to represent the NFC playing for the Super Bowl?
So you mentioned it. They get their starting center back tonight, which is huge. One of the better starting centers in the league. They'll be without one of their tackles. Defensively, though, you're starting to get a little bit healthier. And that's the big thing here is we know what Jamal Adams is. Play him in the spots where he's best, and he will help. And the one thing that we pointed out last week was, hey, this guy could be a real factor here slowing Kyler Murray's legs down. And I thought he played a very good game for what he was asked to do. Just don't put the guy in coverage. Make him a box safety, and he's going to do pretty well here. And then you mentioned Dunlop. This was a guy that wanted out of town. He has been reinvigorated. And I know he plays in Cincinnati, so not a lot of people know about him. And he's not, I wouldn't say in his prime. He's getting up there in age. But if you look at all the pass rushers, he's been one of the best 10 pass rushers in the NFL the last half decade. So this was a good get for them. The other thing that transpired was Collier, their first round pick from a season ago, played his best game of his career last week. So if you can get Collier trending in the right direction, and he's really talented, hopefully he's just scratching the surface, and you can get production out of the one end position, and you address the other end position in Dunlap, you have Jamal Adams healthy now. Shaq Griffin returns this season. If you look at EPA, it's not as bad of a defense as a lot of people are making it out to be, and we don't need this elite defense. This doesn't need to be the Legion of Boom. If you can be average on this side of the ball, with Russell Wilson in that offense, that's probably all you're going to need to be a real contender in the NFC.
So interesting, too, when you look at the way the league has played out, and you obviously don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill as it pertains to trends. I believe with Green Bay getting you to the window last night as a 7.5, 8-point favorite against the Bears, that's just the 12th cover for a favorite in primetime, moving their record to 12-23 so far this season. We know under has been the order of the day as well when the NFL plays under the lights. And did want to ask you before we close the book on this one, have you seen anything?
Holy cow. now you got a lot of questions today.
Yeah, you know what? I like to put you on the spot every now and again. You said you were trying to work.
It also looks like, for whatever reason, a touch of Philadelphia money is entering the market as we sit here. Back to six at a couple of sharp spots. Soft 6.5 at, I don't even know if I'm allowed to say it. Soft 6.5 at another sharp shop there. So it'll be interesting to see. I don't know if that would have been the entry timing that I would have had.
Of course not. But that's never stopped some of the groups that decide to move when they do. Why wait for key numbers that are clearly going to materialize in the market, but when it's a lot more fun to have a quick trigger finger?
There you go. What was your question?
It was about the total. I know we saw it open a little bit higher at FanDuel, and it's ticked down below 49 to 48.5. I was just going to ask if you'd seen the under money there or what you make of that, given some of the elements and some of the X's and O's we just outlined in the breakdown.
So, not being a rocket scientist here, yes, I have seen some under money. Obviously, it's come down. Did get to as low as 48, and then, you know, we're kind of seeing the game day surge back up here as public money enters the market. Again, there is a little bit of a weather situation going on. It's supposed to rain throughout the course of the day, so let's see what the field looks like. And we're just, I think, unsure of what Philadelphia's offense is, but you would hope that they have a little success here. Nothing for me on this total at this number, but the under was sharp early in the week.
Always good to get all sides of the story before making an informed decision, as I know a lot of our listeners will try and put their money to work for them on the final game of this holiday weekend. You have anything else, Payne, that you'd like to share in terms of holiday stories, any regalia that you'd like to go through, given the quality time with the family, or are you just ready to shut things down so you can recharge the batteries and come back 48 hours from now stronger than ever to talk a little college football and one of the more mediocre slates that we've seen in this truncated season?
I was a little weary coming into today. Was on the ropes, feeling like Nate Robinson, but I got to tell you.
No. That's a whole different level of being on the ropes. That's borderline dead, lying face down on the canvas. You at least put forth a better effort that would at least go on to the judges' scorecards.
I have to tell you, I felt good about this performance after being a little uncertain with things about an hour ago.
All right. Well, see, I'm very proud of you. I'm glad you were able to step it up. When the lights are the brightest, we know we can expect you to bring the A game and carry this team on your back.
Don't get carried away.
All right. For Payne Insider, you can follow him on Twitter at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there. And most importantly, like always, follow the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Best of luck with whatever way you choose to wager on the Eagles and Seahawks Monday night football game. Hopefully we'll see you at the window.
Thanks for listening to Bet the Board. You can catch Todd and Payne every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday during football season, breaking down the biggest NFL and college football games. And to make sure you don't miss any free best bets, subscribe to Bet the Board on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts.